Mixed Martial Arts Point of View podcast may not be suitable for all audiences. Viewer and listener discretion is advised.
Welcome everyone once again to another edition of Mixed Martial Arts Point of View Podcast. I am Ant, and alongside me is my esteemed co-host.
Hey, it's Deontay, y'all.
We can be found on social media, on Facebook at Wrestling POV Podcast, on Instagram and Twitter at MMA POV Podcast. We can also be streamed on iTunes, iHeartRadio, Podbean, and Spotify. So Deontay, let me start by asking, how's your week going?
You know, the week has been emotionally one of the more difficult weeks in recent memory. All of the events surrounding the murder of Mr. Floyd, the murder of Ms. Taylor.
Yes.
The murder of Mr. Aubrey, and the what I see as attempted murder in Central Park via cop of Mr. Cooper. So, you know, my mind is heavy with those incidents this week, and I don't think it is at all an overstatement to say that if you are Black in America and you have to have an interaction with law enforcement or just racist individuals who believe it's their job to police Black people, you are in danger at all times in dealing with those types of individuals. So my mind is heavy with that this week. How about yourself, man?
For me, it's been an emotional roller coaster. I cannot lie. Of course, there have been some highs this week. Then there have been some lows this week as a result of everything that has been going on in the news. And so, you know, just trying to manage these emotions and still, you know, press your way through life is tough. But on the flip side, you know, we are still here to claim that we do have life, and you know, my heart goes out to those whose life have been lost as a result of, you know, senseless violence and police brutality, things of that nature. But you know, I'm just thankful for the opportunity to be here, and you know, just learning more and more that tomorrow is not promised. And you know, my heart aches for those who have lost loved ones in the midst of all of this craziness.
It's just, yeah, man, I echo that sentiment, man. It is tough, man. It is tough. You know, I'm a peaceful person, but I don't have any more patience.
Understood. So,
right. It's tough. It's tough, man.
Understood. And I think what we're seeing collectively is patience has worn thin.
Yeah.
And it's coming forth. And, you know, I'm a peaceful person. I don't condone violence. I don't, you know, condone, you know, destruction of property in your homes and your community, things of that nature. But I definitely understand why, you know, such measures are being taken. I mean, at what point does law enforcement and society and government officials, you know, take our concerns seriously and then move forward in doing whatever needs to be done to, you know, removing tension and changing the climate, you know, that is in existence between civilians and law enforcement?
Yeah, man. Civil unrest, or yes. To use the term that is most popular to use, that I actually don't like, rioting, as Martin Luther King Jr. said, is the language of the unheard. So if you will not respect our humanity, in the traditional ways that we show our humanity. I mean, if you won't respect us in that way, then there has to be some way that we get your attention. And by your, I mean the majority of America and the systems and institutions that make up the United States of America that also serve to keep Black people at the bottom of the well. So if you won't heed the many, 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 many times that we have pleaded for our humanity to be recognized, then there comes a point where we feel and we express that we no longer desire to plead with you to respect our humanity. And when it gets to that point and it starts to bubble over, it gets extremely dangerous. But at the same time, I feel like most African Americans feel that justice needs to move from being a noun to a verb. And that does not require any more letters, speeches, boycotts, protests, marches. Not that I have anything against those things, but it occurs to me that this will continue to be done to us by them as long as they can afford it. So we have to make the cost too high for them. How that is done, I don't know. But until it is done, this will continue to happen. That's what I honestly feel in my heart.
Yeah, and it's hard to dispute that. And I just want to actually thank those who are not in the African American or Black community, but are standing on the front lines with us for the sake of obtaining resolution and respect and regard towards us as a people. So for every Caucasian, Asian, Latin, Middle Eastern, any race that or ethnicity that I might not have named at the moment, but actually have a heart for African American and Black people and understand that our lives matter and are doing, you know, what is necessary for our people to, you know, get respect from law enforcement, government officials, and any other entity that tries to disenfranchise, disengage, and dismiss us, I truly thank you. I truly appreciate you. So what we're going to do now is try to brighten things up, if you will, and move on to our MMA hot topic of the week. Bewilderment at welterweight. That's the question. Since Jose Masvidal's win over Nate Diaz back at UFC 244, it was all but official that Masvidal would be next in line for a shot at the current champion, Kamaru Usman. The two have taken their share of jabs at one another on Twitter and in interviews, and even a few fight negotiations have taken place only for them to fall through. They even had a face-to-face verbal confrontation with one another at a pre-Super Bowl 54 event. Last week, as mentioned in the Hot Topic of the Week, Masvidal expressed interest in a rematch with Nate Diaz, which is a detour from what many fight fans came to expect, he and Usman. Recently, Abraham Kawa, Masvidal's manager, confirmed his client is back training, but didn't confirm who he's training for. In response, Ali Abdelaziz, who is Usman's manager, suggested on Twitter that Conor gets the next title shot if Usman Diaz 2 gets booked. We have yet to hear from Conor on the matter. Speculation is that Masvidal is chasing the bag by requesting a Diaz rematch. In response, Usman asked who chooses a rematch of a bout that they sort of won over a chance to be world champion. Additionally, he suggested Masvidal fears a beating. From there, Masvidal offered Conor the chance. Usman offered Conor the chance to prove that he's the GOAT over three divisions in the form of a title shot against him. Leon Edwards tagged Usman in a Twitter with, "Fuck them, they don't want it. They make every excuse in the book. I'll fight you on Fight Island or in the U.S. Let's go." Oh, Masvidal said the reason he and Usman haven't come to fruition is because Usman is asking for too much money. So, what do you think of the craziness that is the welterweight division, and how would matchmaker Deontay Hardy sort things out?
Hey man, that's a good question. I don't know how I would sort things. You know what? After last night, which we'll get into later, I'm sure. It's not a bad idea to have a tournament. The top four welterweights.
That's an excellent idea.
Battle it out tournament style, and the winner gets Usman. I think a tournament would, like I said, face off the top four welterweights. That would be, you know, you could have a double main event at one of the UFC events, and that would be that welterweight tournament. You would take the winners of each fight, and then the next UFC event, those two winners fight each other, and that would be the main event of the next UFC event if there is no other marquee fights. And then the winner of that matchup would then face Usman. I mean, I feel like that would be a great business move. It would be entertaining for the fighters, and I like that. That's probably the way I would go about doing it. And you know, that's more of a fan perspective than necessarily say a promoter's perspective. I'm pretty sure the promoter's first concern is, you know, which fight is going to bring in the most amount of dollars, and let's make that matchup the marquee matchup. But I also know that the UFC is very popular with people who enjoy combat sports, a lot of boxing converts, because they don't do things the way boxing does in terms of making their fans wait this like crazy amount of time, years, before, you know, the marquee members of a certain weight class get to clash against each other and then get a title shot. You know, there's no situations where the person who has the title or the belt in the division gets to fight two or three bums before he fights someone that's a legit contender. So that's one of the things that the fans of UFC really, really love. How about you, man? How would you have?
Okay, so that was actually one thing I didn't consider, a tournament. And the reason why I didn't consider a tournament, which is an excellent idea, is that UFC isn't necessarily in the business of, you know, doing tournaments, as say Bellator is. The last time UFC, if I remember correctly, the last time UFC held a tournament was in 2012 when they were trying to decide who the inaugural flyweight champion would be for the men, and it ended up being Demetrius Johnson. So under the mindset that UFC does not embrace your idea and, you know, bring forth a tournament, if Antoine Gerard Hoffman, yes, I gave you all my middle name, if I'm the matchmaker, here's what I would do. I would go ahead first and shoot for Usman and Masvidal. I mean, again, Usman is the welterweight champion. Masvidal is the BMF champion. And for those of you who don't know, the BMF championship was basically a novelty belt that was created as a result of Nate Diaz and Masvidal having reputations for being two of the sport's BMFs. Bad Mother Evers, for those of you not familiar with the acronym. And
so that's not Young Jeezy in them.
No. Nope. Okay, not Black Mafia Family. Yeah, no affiliation with that. Right, right.
Big Meech is not involved.
No, not at all. In no way is he involved. At least not that I know of. So, what I would do is I would have Masvidal and Usman go ahead and settle the score as to who indeed the undisputed champion is. If for some reason these two can't sort out some sort of agreement, I would either go with Usman and Burns, and I say that because given what Burns did to Woodley on last night, and as Deontay said, we will get into that. And considering that Usman was the number one contender and the former champion going into last night, I would give Burns the shot. If for some reason that is unable to come to fruition, then I would go with Burns facing off with United Kingdom's Leon Edwards, since the travel bans have been lifted for international athletes to compete in the U.S. Plus, Burns recently has the second longest winning streak in UFC's welterweight division at 8, which only trails behind Usman's 11. And within that 11-fight win streak, Usman actually beat Leon Edwards back at UFC on 17, on FX17 in December 2015. So I think because of that, I would actually have Leon audition, you know, for a shot, one more fight against Burns, and then, you know, the winner of that could go ahead and face Usman. But there's entirely too much confusion. There's too much bewilderment involving the 170-pounders, and the picture needs to be cleared up. And for those of you Conor fans out there that are wondering, well, what about him? I think the best thing to do with Conor McGregor right now is go ahead and pitch him in the trilogy bout with Nate Diaz. I mean, Nate Diaz won the first fight by way of a submission, rear naked choke submission. The second fight, Conor McGregor won controversially. And I can't say this enough. I know a lot of people would disagree with me. Yes, Conor did knock Nate down 3 times in that fight. However, Nate Diaz outstruck Conor McGregor by 55 strikes, and he actually landed a takedown in the fight. And I'm sorry, knockdowns aren't enough for me to, you know, go with Conor being a winner, especially given the gap in strikes and the takedown that Nate secured in about. Yeah. So with that being said, that's my take on, or that is our take rather, on the welterweight division and the craziness that it involves right now. And we're going to move forward into our ground and pound segment. And first item, of course, is a recap of UFC Fight Night Vegas. Tyron Woodley versus Gilbert Burns, excuse me. So just to give you a quick rundown, because I'm sure we're going to spend an extensive amount of time talking about the main event and the absolute shock factor that came with it. In the opening bout, Chris Gutierrez defeated Vince Morales by way of leg kicks, TKO, 4 minutes 27 seconds into the second round. No, I did not say anything incorrectly, or no, that's not a misquote, but yes, Gutierrez actually beat Morales by way of a TKO due to leg kicks. I mean, the kicks that Gutierrez landed on Morales were so brutal. You could see Morales grimacing and trying to, you know, bite the bullet and you know, progress throughout the fight, but he couldn't put pressure on it. And, you know, thankfully the referee, Jason Herzog, thankfully he stepped in and said enough is enough. I mean, it was absolutely brutal. You could see the lumps on his leg, the redness, and I can only imagine what his leg looks like this morning after having a sleep, after having his sleep on it. Casey Kinney defeated Lewis Smoker by way of guillotine choke submission, 3 minutes, 3 seconds into round 1. Brandon Royval defeated Tim Elliott via arm triangle submission, 3 minutes, 18 seconds of round 2. Jamal Hill defeated Clitson Abreu via knee strike TKO, 1 minute, 51 seconds of round 1. Daniel Rodriguez defeated Gabriel Green by way of unanimous decision. And let me stop here just to take my head off to Gabriel Green, because originally Kevin Holland was supposed to fight Daniel Rodriguez, but Kevin Holland had to pull out as a result of a shoulder injury. And Green came in on 4 days' notice and put on quite a fight against Rodriguez. He lost by way of unanimous decision, but I mean, the shots that they were hitting each other with, it was insane. It was absolutely brutal, and it amazes me that the two were actually able to stand throughout the course of the fight and make it you know, to the judges rendering a decision. Former women's strawweight, women's flyweight contender Caitlin Chookagian defeated Antonina Shevchenko by way of unanimous decision. And the backstory of this fight is Chookagian, and I always struggle to say that name. She recently lost to Antonina's sister, flyweight champion Valentina Shevchenko. Back at, I believe that was what, UFC 247. So Chookagian was actually able to get a win over the Shevchenko namesake, but it was of course in the form of Antonina, who is good, but you know, she's not Valentina. Mackenzie Dern defeated Hannah Seifert by way of knee bar submission, 2 minutes 36 seconds of the first round. And I absolutely applaud Mackenzie, and I say that because she had a child back in June 2019. So she came back October 19 and lost a decision bout to Amanda Ribas. And unfortunately, Dern, you know, got some criticism for coming back too soon to fight. And it was unwarranted. I mean, if she felt like she was ready to go, who are we to say otherwise? I mean, unfortunately, the fight didn't work out in her favor, so she suffered her first loss, but she bounced back quite well in this bout. She, you know, took a couple of shots from Cyphers, but she was able to outwit her, get her to the ground, and surprise her with that knee bar submission. Roosevelt Roberts beat Brock Weaver by way of rear naked choke submission, 3 minutes 26 rounds of round 2. Billy Quarantillo, defeated Spike Carlisle by way of unanimous decision, which to me deserves a nod for not only fight of the night, but it was, for me, possibly a fight of the year candidate. I mean, an absolute scrambling between the two, the exchange strikes, the ground game, the wrestling, the takedowns. I mean, this fight gave you any and everything that you wanted, and the energy was top-notch. It was amazing. Augusto Sakai defeated Blagoy Ivanov via split decision. And what to me was controversial about this fight was a moment where Ivanov was set to land a takedown on Sakai, but Sakai held the fence to prevent himself from being taken down. It was right in referee Jason Herzog's face, and in no way did Herzog enforce any type of penalty or removal of point whatsoever. And at a minimum, this fight should have at least ended in a draw as a result of that, if it was officiated correctly. But unfortunately, yet another mishap on Jason Herzog's part, in addition to the whole Anthony Smith teeth loss situation from a couple of weeks back. And so, what is that
rule? See, this was one of those things as a novice MMA viewer, I wasn't aware of. Like, I've always thought to myself when I watch MMA fights and I see people go against the fence, or get close to the fence and get either hit really hard or get taken down to the ground, I've always thought to myself, why don't they just grab the damn fence and help them? But now I see why. Okay, yeah. So you can't.
You cannot use the fence as leverage.
You can't use as leverage.
Right, right.
Okay.
Now, there have been moments where, you know, a fighter may grab the fence with their toe, or it may be a subtle or slight grab, and then the referee will give a warning. But this was so blatant and obvious, you know, with Sakai's grabbing of the fence. It was clear he was using it as leverage to keep himself from being taken down. The referee was in position to see it, and in no way did he enforce any type of rule or law or penalty or penalize Sakai for that, which was absolute nonsense.
Yeah, I watched that fight actually, and I saw that, and I was like, well, he's smart. He grabbed the fence, but immediately it was like Cormier felt like grabbing, like he immediately was offended. He was appalled. He was like perplexed, like why the point wasn't. Cormier was so mad about the grabbing of the fence and that point not being taken, that he, from the time it happened, I'm not sure how much time was left in that round, but to the end of the round, that's all he talked about.
Yeah.
He was pissed. I didn't know it was like that, though, man.
Yeah, so apparently, you know, you're not allowed to do that at all, not apparently, but just flat out, you're not allowed to do that. And so with Daniel, if I remember correctly, he and Ivanov actually trained together, I believe, either on a full-time basis or every now and again with American Top Team. Not American Top Team, my apologies. American Kickboxing Academy. And not to mention, Daniel Cormier has a wrestling background. So anything that, you know, goes against his background or that cheats a person out of, you know, scoring a victory or scoring points as a result of a wrestling move, then, you know, of course, he's going to take offense to it. And I can't tell you, I blame him for being upset because that was just so blatant.
He was right. Cormier was right. I mean, it was extremely blatant.
Yeah.
Easy to see. He didn't even try to hide that.
At all. And then, of course, finally, in the main event, Gilbert Burns, in a fashion that only he himself and his team foresaw, defeated Tyrone Woodley in a unanimous decision. What were you thinking as this fight unfolded the way it did?
Last show we did, and we gave our predictions in this fight, we both picked Woodley. But I remember saying that because of his long layoff and because of the status that he held as a UFC welterweight superstar prior to losing to Usman, that he ran the danger of coming into a fight feeling like he had to show the whole world, I'm still Tyrone Woodley.
Yes.
And this is what I do. And I'm gonna wreck this dude. I feel like when I watched the fight, his plan and his strategy clearly, excuse me, I'm sorry, man. His plan and his strategy clearly was to look for the big punch knockout, the one hitter quitter. I don't know if his team told him to do that or if he just made it up in his mind that that's what was going to happen to get the buzz going about him once again and once again ascend to that superstar status. In my mind, I think he saw it as, I'm going to knock this dude out with a one-hitter quitter. I'm going to call out Usman. I'm going to fight Usman again, get my belt back, and I'm back on top. And I believe that's what he thought in his mind would happen. But that's not a fight strategy. You're fighting a dude who, to my understanding, came into that match with a 5-match win streak. Is that correct?
Yep, 4-fight, 5-fight win streak. Correct.
So you fighting a guy that's hot right now, and you better have a strategy to fight him every single round, or you're going to not win, which is what we saw. He didn't win. Not only did he not win, but it was probably one of the more one-sided UFC bouts I've ever seen. Round one, he gets caught, goes off balance, gets taken down. And from that point forward, the jiu-jitsu mastery of Burns took over. He found a way to position his body so that all of his weight was leaning on Woodley while keeping Woodley pinned to the ground, while trying to maneuver to get a submission, occasionally striking, opened up a cut real nasty on Woodley's eye that was pretty much gushing, that Woodley's corner actually was able to stop. They did a really good job at that through the rest of the fight. But for about 3 minutes or maybe more, Woodley was pretty much on his back, trying to get Burns off of him. And when you have a guy that weighs that much just sitting on you, and you're trying for 2 or 3 minutes to get him off your back, that exerts so much energy that he didn't have anything left. He didn't have anything left, as we saw in the later rounds, as he pretty much stood in front of Burns, no real lateral movement, you know, no bouncing his step, none of that usual almost Wolverine-like aggression from him. You know, Burns was missing badly with some kicks, and with some punches to the point where Burns was off balance. But Woodley did not capitalize on any of that. Agreed. And on top of that, Woodley had a 3-inch reach advantage, and he wasn't putting a jab in his face. Mm-hmm. You have to put a jab in a guy's face who's going to stand in front of you like Burns was, who does not have the same reach that you have, and who is aggressively coming at you. You gotta give him something to think about as he comes towards you. You gotta pump that jab in his face, and you gotta move. You gotta circle him. And the corner didn't help at all. I mean, I don't know. Again, I'm not a MMA expert. I'm a novice, but the corner didn't seem to convey the sense of urgency one would need to convey to let your fighter know, like, you're losing bad, man. You're not just we need to get him here or we need a knockout. No. What are you doing? You are losing this. This is your future. Wake up. None of that. None of that was happening in the corner. So, a disappointing effort by Woodley. I really felt like by the third round, he had completely checked out. And I really felt like he wanted to be somewhere else by the third round, other than where he was. With his advanced age at 38, which is not old, but for a professional fighter with a lot of bouts, that's in that sport, that's an advanced age. I wouldn't be surprised if he's not strongly considering retiring right now, but that's my take on it, man. I was profoundly disappointed, man. How did you see things?
All right, so there are a couple of things I took from this. So when Edwards, I'm not sure if you recall, and we might have had this discussion previously, but originally Tyron Woodley was supposed to fight Leon Edwards in London. Unfortunately, that fight fell through as a result of the travel restrictions that came forth thanks to COVID-19. Okay. So when that happened, Gilbert Burns took to Twitter and immediately campaigned for a shot at Tyron Woodley. I mean, he was relentless in his approach. Woodley, of course, would respond, you know, pretty much making it look like Burns wasn't on his level. Burns, you know, can't swim in the same body of water that Woodley can. You know, his level of competition is much greater. He's the greatest welterweight of all time. Of course, I'm going to combat that with George St. Pierre. Of course, with his run and, you know, his title defense streak. But he was absolutely dismissive towards Burns. I mean, there were moments here and there where he acknowledged Burns for what he has accomplished up to that point. But, you know, pretty much he was just like, dude, we don't belong in the same discussion. And in one sense, I understand, because Woodley, outside of George St. Pierre, has accomplished so much in that division. However, in the sport known as fighting, known as combat sports, the fight game, if you will, even though there is truth to what Woodley said, you never want to make the mistake of thinking the man across the cage from you is incapable of beating you. I also found myself wondering, as the fight progressed and when Burns, I mean, immediately, as soon as the ref said fight, the way he took control of the center of the octagon told me that he meant absolute business. And, you know, I've seen a mixture of Tyron Woodley where in some fights he would start out as the aggressor. In other fights, you know, he'll be reserved, try to get a feel of, you know, what you're bringing forth. And then he will go ahead and attack from there. Even in his moments where he tried to explode, it didn't work for him, because a lot of the times when he threw strikes, they found air. I mean, he landed some shots on Brooks, but for the most part, his strikes found air. From that moment when Burns took the center of the octagon and pretty much made it be known, I'm here to win a fight, and for him to unleash the combinations that he hit, that he landed, and hitting Tyron with the shots that he did, it absolutely floored me, and it made me wonder too, if Tyrone was somehow, you know, after receiving those shots and after having his eyebrow split, it made me wonder if somehow he underwent some sort of shell shock and maybe mentally went back to his loss to Kamaru Usman, where when Usman took control of him and grinded him against the cage and, you know, repeatedly you know, chopped away at his ribs and was able to take him down. I wonder if he experienced some sort of shell shock from that and, you know, was unable to recover. You know, a lot of people feel like he, you know, was unable to recover from the first round. I thought, to me, when his eye was split open, I thought there was no turning back at that point. I thought he had reached the point of no return at that moment of the fight. Burns was absolutely dominant. Yeah. And as you said, I know that, you know, Tyrone is still 38. He's 38 years old. He still has his speed. He still has his explosiveness, but it just wasn't there. And a lot of people felt like he was slowing down. No, I don't think he was slowing down. I just think he was discouraged as a result of his inability to do what he wanted to do in that fight. I just feel like Burns did his job and he placed himself in an excellent position to be next for a title shot or at least be in a match that has championship implications, so that should he win that match, then he would get the next shot at the belt. And, you know, just even looking at numbers overall, significant strikes, Burns 83 to Woodley's 28. Total strikes, Burns 156, Woodley 65. Burns landed 2 of 8 of his takedowns. Even had a submission attempt. The ground control was insane. I mean, he absolutely lambasted Woodley. And when I think about, you know, just the overall forward movement of Burns, like, you know this because you've lived in apartments once upon a time, and even in your condominium now, you know, like when your parents would, or when your mom would drape curtains onto the big balcony window, and you know there's a process when you go inch by inch by inch and draping each hook, you know, onto the rail before the curtain is completely covering the balcony window or the balcony door. That reminded me of how Burns continuously had Woodley draped against the cage. I mean, every inch of the cage, Burns just draped Woodley against it and just had his way with him. Even when Woodley tried to, you know, counter and be the aggressor on the cage, he just couldn't do anything with Burns. Burns had the forward movement and he just kept Woodley draped up against the cage. It was just absolute dominance.
Absolute dominance. Period.
Yeah.
There was no question at the end of that fight who won. Burns controlled the entire bout. And I really felt like in watching that fight, one guy came to the fight with his lunchbox.
He did.
The other guy came to the fight and checked out real early and never checked back in.
Never. All right, so we move forward to our next item in the ground and pound. UFC institutes stricter COVID-19 protocols ahead of possible next event in Las Vegas. The UFC will be instituting, and these are the things that took place, of course, prior to the fight, and my guess is, you know, moving forward until the COVID-19 era has passed.
Okay.
The UFC will be instituting the stricter protocols for COVID-19 ahead of upcoming UFC on ESPN9 card that's expected to take place in Las Vegas. The promotion has already issued a set of rules for fighters and their teams for 3 previous events held in Jacksonville, Florida. But now the UFC is tightening its grip on the situation, with Nevada expected to allow, well, since Nevada has allowed combat sports in the states to be reinstated. Test 1. Upon arrival at the host hotel, athletes and their cornermen will be required to take a COVID-19 swab test. After the test is administered, fighters and their teams are to self-isolate inside the hotel until test results are final. The athletes and their teams are not allowed to leave the hotel or have physical contact with anyone else until test results are final. Fighters and their teams will be allowed to resume with normal fight week activities once test results return negative. Positive tests require fighters and their teams affected to remain in their rooms while awaiting instructions from UFC's medical team. Test number 2. A second COVID-19 swab test will be required at the host hotel on Fridays before the fight following the weigh-ins. The same rules apply with fighters where they self-isolate in a host hotel overnight until transportation arrives to take them to the UFC Apex facility. No athletes or coaches or their coaches are allowed to leave the host hotel without prior approval from the Nevada State Athletic Commission. Fighters are also instructed not to have physical contact with anyone outside of their team. If the tests are negative, fighters can move forward with the event. A positive test will place athletes back into isolation while awaiting instruction from UFC's medical team. The UFC Performance Institute will also remain closed during this time. Based on wording in the protocol memo, these rules will be required not only by the UFC, but also by the Nevada State Athletic Commission. The commission had suspended all combat sports in the state since mid-March, but Governor Steve Sisolak announced phase two for reopening in Nevada on Tuesday, which will clear the way for combat sports to return without audiences in attendance. Final protocols required by the commission was ratified in a meeting on Wednesday, with the UFC event being held on yesterday. UFC on ESPN9 was headlined by a welterweight showdown between former champion Tyron Woodley and Gilbert Burns, as we just discussed. The UFC also plans to hold numerous shows at their Apex facility until additional restrictions are lifted, which then will allow fans to attend sporting events again. One note that we didn't see, you know, in various reports, but came forward by way of the actual event. So on last night, and presumably throughout the COVID era of the company, UFC is going back to its original post-fight interview social distancing plan of having winners escorted to an isolated room, and Daniel Cormier or the assigned analyst will remotely interview them from the commentary desk. So any thoughts on these newly implemented measures in reference to protocol for COVID-19?
I respect the fact that they're doing these things to try to make it as safe as possible for their fighters. They've had a few events in the last few weeks that have been successful. We have not heard of any mass outbreaks from people involved in these events. Although if there was any mass outbreaks, if it wasn't a fighter that caught it or a trainer that caught it, I'm sure we wouldn't even know. I applaud them for their efforts. I respect it. And I feel like if they are determined to remain open, which they obviously are, and the best way to do it is to make sure everyone's safe. So, like I said, I respect it. And I think they should keep it up. And hopefully there isn't any mass outbreaks or any other fighters or fighters' camps who get infected with COVID-19.
Yeah, I must say, respect what UFC is doing and trying to keep every person involved safe. And, you know, just looking at the measure that was taken in, you know, the co-fight interviews with the winners of the fight, it was different, but they were very expeditious with it. The timing with it was very punctual, and it didn't delay the card any. So hats off to the UFC for continuously implementing every measure possible to ensure the safety of everyone connected to their live events. So what we're going to do right now is we're going to take a commercial break, and Deontay and I are going to introduce to you a new segment, which is known as the Face Off. This is Mixed Martial Arts Point of View Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is MMA Hall of Famer Randy the Natural Couture. Listen to Ant and Deontay on the MMA POV Podcast. That's an order.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Mixed Martial Arts Point of View Podcast. Deontay and I are proud to introduce to you a new segment of the show known as the Face Off. So the Face Off allows us to have a conversation with a guest about MMA as well as matters of the heart. Our first guest is a gentleman I met after seeing him perform at the Carlisle Supper Club back in 2015 in the Washington metropolitan area. During this conversation, I learned of him being a fan of mixed martial arts. Upon following him on social media, I noticed how involved he gets in discussions posted about fighters and MMA public, you know, by fighters and MMA publications alike. Outside of his love for the game, he is a widely acclaimed, soul-rooted R&B singer who got his start in 2001 by writing a song for India Ari. From there, he recorded independent music and became famous for his rasping baritone and down-to-earth storytelling. In addition to Ari, he's collaborated with her to write the 2008 Grammy nominee hit Words. He has worked with the likes of Fonte, Zoe, Carmen Rogers, Algebra Blissett, just to name a few. He's created and collaborated on such hits as Booed Up, Forevermore, Something About You, Body Language, Beautiful Problem, Kinfolk, Charge, Show Me the Money, Show Me the Way, my apologies, Show Me the Way, Playing Your Game, again, just to name a few. Mixed Martial Arts Point of View Nation, please join me and Deontay in welcoming the one, the only, Anthony David. Anthony, what is happening, sir? How you feel?
Calm down. Yeah, what's up, man? How you feeling?
Doing well, man. How about you?
Excellent. Yes, sir. Just got through visiting the family.
Okay, good, man. How's everybody doing considering all this craziness out here?
It's chilling. Okay. They're all right, man. I mean, they're down in Savannah, so okay. Down there, and actually got to hit the beach while I was down there, so I'm really relaxed right now.
Okay, what was that beach setting like, given everything that's going on?
It's pretty chill, Savannah Beach. I mean, you know, I'm in Georgia, so Georgia's been open. And then I feel like Savannah, is, especially if it was related to Corona, is, I mean, they're seeing it in the city, you see it.
Yeah.
You see people, but actually people were kind of out in the city even, like just clubbing it as I was walking downtown. But then, and on the beach, they're chilling, like, you know. I mean, nobody, honestly, the beach, you're kind of socially distanced anyway. I mean, you know, you get there, you lay your towel down or sit in your chair, and that's that.
Gotcha.
Nobody's going to go sit on your chair. I mean, on your stuff. So people are distance away from each other, and we're chilling.
Okay, good deal. Definitely glad to hear that, man. So, you know, as mentioned, you are a you know, you are heavily entrenched in the music industry. That is your career. So I got to ask, man, given the demands that come with a music career, recording music, touring, things of that nature, could you detail us on the kind of impact that COVID-19 has had on you and your music?
Oh, yeah, I ain't been touring. I'm totally done with that.
Yeah.
You know, it's helping me shift lanes for some things I had planned anyway. So,
okay.
Yeah, bad and good. I mean, no matter what it is, we got to pivot and do what we got to do. So, yeah, kind of turned things upside down for a minute, but by now I'm kind of, you know, landing on my feet.
Understood. Deontay, you have a question for Mr. David, sir?
Yeah, no doubt, man. How have you been able to connect with your fans the pandemic started to keep them engaged in your career?
Social media, man. I've done a few of those online live joints, you know what I'm saying? I've done that. Right. And then, honestly, I've used this term to kind of disconnect. So I haven't really, you know, I've played a few of those things online. You know, obviously, if you're on social media at all, you have, you know, communication. So it didn't really change that much, you know what I'm saying? It's kind of, as far as online, maybe it picked up a little bit. But in some ways, I've chosen to kind of back up a little bit off of that.
All right.
Understood. All right, so my next question for you is, giving, you know, the, I guess, alternate means of entertainment that have come by way of social media, specifically with Swiss Beats and Timbaland by way of Versus TV, have you witnessed any of the battles, and what is your take on it?
I'm sorry, say that one more time.
So, All right, no problem. So, given the alternate forms of entertainment that social media have provided, specifically with the versus battles, by way of Timbaland and Swiss Beatz, what is your take on them thus far?
Yeah, I've done. I got into the. My favorite one was the T-Pain and Lil Jon one because that was like fun and I was drinking in the crib. And then the Jill Scott one, that was cool.
Yes.
Erykah Badu. And then who else? Oh, Babyface.
Yeah.
What else did I do? I think those are the only ones I did.
Okay. I don't know, man.
Those are the only ones I did. Gotcha.
I'm about to say, if you ever get a chance, and if you're a fan of the whole dance hall setting.
Oh, yeah, of course. So I got them in order. Like, my bad. Yeah, of course. I saw that one. That's the best one.
Yes.
And then I think the T-Pain one was like a strong second.
Okay.
Yeah,
my
bad.
Gotcha.
I did see that one.
I have to go back and check out the T-Pain one. Deontay, another question for Anthony?
Yes.
You said Deontay, not Beyonce.
Deontay. Deontay.
There's a D on there, brother. Yeah, who haven't you had the pleasure of working with that you really want to work with? Whether it's a producer, another singer, maybe it's a musician, maybe it's a writer, but who?
I'm glad you fleshed that out, I like Pharrell. I'll just say people I like, a lot of times when I listen to him, I'll be like, oh man, how did he do that? I wish I was sitting there. So probably him. Names of people. Her, I like her. Name some people. Give me some.
Jill Scott.
I'm not that pressed, but I do like her. Well, going back to your, like, want to work with, I'm not pressed. I wouldn't say I wouldn't, but that didn't come up in, one of my first. Who else?
D'Angelo.
Still a fan.
Mm-hmm.
You said D'Angelo?
Yeah. And then there's other people that's new. I'm just drawing a blank with names as soon as you ask me, to be honest.
What about of the new crop of people? How about maybe a Summer Walker, Ari Lennox?
There's one somebody that I'm thinking of even more than them. I like Ari Lennox. Yeah, she's from DC, right?
I think Baltimore.
Baltimore, yeah.
Okay, up that way.
If you know anything about D.C., Maryland people, and Baltimore people.
Baltimore ain't D.C.
He knows.
I know the deal. Yeah. Yeah. Baltimore is not included in the DMV, even though it's in Maryland. Yeah, I got you. Yeah. She's too far, even though it's an hour.
It might be less than an hour.
I know. I drive that. What is that? 50? I drive that all the time.
It's
a hot mess now.
Yeah. But yeah, I like her. I like her a lot.
What are your thoughts on Marsha Ambrosius?
Just regular thoughts. I think she's one of the greatest singers.
Yeah.
In our generation, for sure. Beyond that, she's dope. I love her a lot.
Okay.
I toured with her.
Nice. That was going to be my next question. Nice. All right, so let's get into the initial reason as to why we brought you aboard. Of course, we tip our hat to you and everything that you have done musically, but as I mentioned in the intro, you are indeed a mixed martial arts fan. So,
yeah, let's talk fight, man.
Yes, man. Yeah, let's get into it. Let's do it, man. He's ready. He is ready. So, first and foremost, man, tell us, how did you become a fan of mixed martial arts?
How did I do it? I think probably Rampage, Shane Helms.
Oh, yeah.
And then, what's weird, too? Also, the 300 movies. They showed the workout they did.
Yes.
And somehow that was linked to MMA, too. And that just started getting my mind to watching that. And I started thinking, wow, like, man, you could be at a bar and these guys don't, they might look like Anderson Silva. Like, you could get dusted up by these dudes.
Yeah.
And so then Anderson Silva locked me in. But I think I started with Rampage and Rashad. Yeah, around that era.
Yes. Deontay? another question for Anthony by chance?
Yeah, man. I am a novice MMA fan, right?
Okay.
I'm not at all on I'm not at all on your level or on my boy Ant's level. Now I have come to appreciate MMA a lot more through friendship, but as a novice, like, what is the most nuanced about?
Are you breaking up? I can't hear you.
Can you hear me?
As a novice MMA fan,
what is one of the more nuanced things about mixed martial arts someone like me should be paying attention to enhance my love for the sport?
Probably really trying to understand the ground game more, because that's where people zone out. I like the stories of the different fighters. Like, I'm trying to think of, yeah, man, even like John Jones is just a mess. But, you know what I like? It's her story, the Karate Hottie. Like,
yes.
Being the mom and like the fact that she brings her daughter in there with her sometimes, and her daughter, I've seen her get beat up. There's just like life lessons in there. And I like, Max Holloway?
Yeah.
His thing with his kids. I like the backstories of them, because I like to see them, you know, overcome things and all that kind of stuff.
All right, so my next question for you is, who is or are your favorite fighters, both modern day and all time?
Okay, Israel Adesanya, current.
Nice.
Number one.
Nice.
Yeah. I was a big fan of Rampage. I'm still a fan of John Jones, even though he's crazy. Max Holloway. Who fought last? Oh, Woodley fought last night.
Yeah, Tyron Woodley.
I'm a fan of Woodley. Fan of him. Man, that's a lot. Valentina Shevchenko,
yes.
Love her. Joanna. I like her a lot too.
Yeah. So you mentioned Tyron Woodley as one of your favorite fighters, and in the beginning of the show, Deontay and I delved into the main event of UFC Fight Night Vegas between he and Gilbert Burns. Were you actually able to see the fight, and if so, what did you take away from it?
Yeah, I got to see it. He should retire. He didn't want to fight. He was like all around the ring, in the corner. Dude had to like chase him the whole time. I got it. He got popped in the first round, but he was trying to survive all the time. And he just you could see it.
Yeah.
It's a second fight like that. He just ain't worked on anything for his style. Like, and he's 38. Like, that's a lot for a sport. He ain't gonna learn nothing new.
Indeed.
I was really not believing in what he was talking before the fight, to be honest.
Yeah, because it was a bit excessive how he kept talking about how he's in a violent state of mind, and I'm thinking to myself, okay, I understand, but should a fighter not be in a violent state of mind since that's what he does for a living?
Yeah. it sucks too, because when he was really getting he was trying to get the hip hop community and everything into it, when everybody really showed up to the fight. Usman dusted him. It was crazy.
It was.
Usman's one of my favorite fighters too. Now,
yes.
What he did to Woodley that day kind of put him, you know, because this stuff is boring sometimes. Or what he did to Kobe. Yeah.
Yeah.
That made me go, okay. Yeah, I'm messing with him.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. I cannot dispute that at all. Deontay, did you have another question before we close this out and then go into our predictions?
No, we can go right into predictions, because it's interesting that he said that he felt like, in watching the fight, and he's way more of an MMA expert than I am, but he felt like in watching the fight that Woodley should retire, because I remember you and I now text conversation after the fight yesterday. I also said that Woodley, it would not surprise me if Woodley came out and said, you know, I'm retiring.
Yeah, I thought he was going to. Right? And then he got on his live and said, you know, he's going to be back. I'm like, nah, you know. But if you need some money, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's their job, so.
Yeah.
If you want to do that.
Yeah.
I mean.
Right. Well, I did have one more question before we go into our predictions. Is there anything about the game, the mixed martial arts game, that you, Anthony David, would change if you had the power to do so?
Not really. I hear some suggestions and stuff like that, like no rounds and stuff like that. But nah, I like it the way it is.
Okay, cool, cool.
Can Tyrone Woodley get a verse on your next song? Nah. He can't spend a hot 16 on there. Nah.
You heard his song. I'll beat your ass.
Yeah, he's certified trash. He's certified trash.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, what we're going to do now is actually move forward into the prediction segment of our show, UFC 250 predictions. And also, this is the MMA Point of View podcast pay-per-view points game. And just in case you don't know, Anthony, so I started an initiative, if you will, where I am allowing fans to try to, you know, make their predictions on fights. So basically, all they have to do is guess the winner of the fight, the round in which the fight will be won, and the method of victory of the main card. And then in the bonus section, you have to guess based on your decisions or, you know, list, how many fights in the main card will end by way of knockout, how many will end by way of submission, how many will end by way of decision. And so what we're going to do is we're going to pretty much run a year-long season, if you will. And the person that has the most points...
Okay, get our averages.
Yeah, get the averages up. And the person who stands at the top of the mountain and wins the pay-per-view points game will receive a $50 gift card and an autographed bobblehead from Hall of Fame legend and friend of the show, Randy Couture.
Oh, I want that.
Okay, man. So it's safe to say that you are participating in the game.
Like, what's the wrestler guy? Dang.
Khabib.
Mighty Man. Huh?
Khabib.
Oh my God, Khabib is on my list. He's up there. And then, but I'm thinking the wrestler, the Triple C.
Henry Cejudo. Yes, yes.
Yeah. I just wanted to shout him out. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Cool. So, all right, what we're gonna do is we're gonna get into this main card of UFC 250. We're gonna start with the opening bout, and then we're gonna work our way up to the main event. So first, in bantamweight action, we have Eddie Wineland. Eddie Wineland, who's 24-13-1 against undefeated Sean O'Malley. Okay, we already got Anthony's pick. He wants
Eddie. What's his name? Eddie what?
Eddie Wineland.
He's 31-13-1
He's 24-13-1
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Sean O'Malley, with the hands, finish KO. First round.
Okay, first round KO. Okay, bet. Oh, he's ready. Told you, man. Anthony is heavily entrenched in the game. Deontay, who you got?
Now, I am contractually prevented from giving my predictions unless Melissa participates because we have a competition.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And she knows that I'm coming for her.
All right.
So I don't want to do anything that's going to give me an unfair advantage so she can accuse me of cheating.
Gotcha.
After I mollywop her. I'm just going to listen to the predictions and learn something.
Okay.
That's what I'm
going to
do.
Okay. All right. I respect that. And then, you know, as long as you get your picks in by Saturday at 5 p.m. before the prelims kick off, all good. So for me...
Let her know I'm coming, man.
All right, will do. For me, I'm going with Sean. I'm going with a decision. And I say that because Wineland has a chin of granite. He's only been knocked out once in his career. And that dates back to like 2011 or... you know, somewhere far back. But
you got a little intel on me. I don't know who he is, so
okay,
I went off the record.
All right, yeah. No problem. So and with that, I think, you know, I do think that O'Malley will be the volume striker of the two, but I just think that it'll be to a capacity where, you know, he'll just outpunch him and outpoint him. But, you know, Wineland would still be standing. Now, if he does knock out Wineland, then you're going to have to respect O'Malley as the legit truth, you know, on the rise in that division.
How old is Wineland?
So Wineland is like, yeah, Wineland is 35 and O'Malley is 25.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm still sticking with my okay. prediction.
All right, good deal, good deal. Next up in welterweight action, we have Neil Magny versus Anthony Rocco Martin in the welterweight division.
I don't know Anthony Rocco Martin.
Okay.
I know Neil Magny. He is good. He's kind of boring, even though he was really good in his last fight.
Yeah.
I'm going to just go decision Neil Magny.
Okay, so we're going Magny decision.
He's a decision kind of guy.
Yeah, yeah, that is so true. And that's actually the route that I went, Magny, by way of decision. So Magny, once upon a time, was considered an up-and-coming welterweight who eventually was going to, you know, inject himself into the title picture. But, you know, he's been a bit streaky, inconsistent in the win-loss department, and is trying to, you know, rattle off a win streak that extends three. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah. All right, so, yeah, we're both going decision Magny?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. I still think he can mess around and get a title, but he's boring. I don't want him to.
Yeah. I hear you. All right. Up next in bantamweight action, we have Aljamain Sterling versus Corey Sandhagen. So these two are at the top of the food chain, and now that Henry Cejudo has vacated the belt, these are two of the top four contenders for that belt.
I'm going Sterling. I don't know the other guy.
Okay, okay.
I wanted him to fight Henry. I don't think he would have won, but I wanted him to fight.
Yeah, yeah. I wanted to see him against Henry, too, but, of course, things didn't play out that way. So what round and method of victory are we talking, eh?
Oh, wow. Ooh. Huh. I'm going to go decision on that, too.
Okay, okay. Yeah. All right. For me, I got Aljamain Sterling. Same thing. Decision.
Okay.
All right. In the co-main event, we have Rafael Assuncao going up against Cody Garbrandt. My thoughts is out.
I don't want to go against Cody, even though
I know.
You go first.
All right, for me, I went back and forth with this one. And again, like I said, the deadline for submitted picks is Saturday at 5 p.m., so my pick may change a couple of times. But right now, I have a sunk side by way of second round knockout. And I say that because Cody's chin is glass, unfortunately. He's lost three straight by way of knockout. And a sunk side, even though he suffered a loss recently to Marlon Moraes, he's still a dog in that division, and he still has some knockout power with him. But on the flip side, I do feel like Cody is desperate. And if for no other reason, he'll win as a result of desperation. And again, my picks may change between now and the deadline, but for right now, I see a Sunside winning by another knockout. Who you got?
A knockout. Oh. I'm going to go Cody by knockout in a second.
Cody knockout in a second. Okay.
I want to see him get it back.
Yes.
So Sunside was good, though.
Yeah.
I can't remember Sunside's style, though. I don't know. I mean, he's Brazilian?
I want to say he's Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to go with Cody. Knockout in a second.
Okay. All right.
That's my final answer.
Gotcha. Okay, and by the way, that is the co-main event of the evening. And, of course, our main event, the one and only UFC Women's Bantamweight and Featherweight Champion, Amanda Nunes, who is defending her 145-pound belt against Felicia Spencer. Who you got, Anthony?
I know. KO and one.
Oh, KO and one. Okay.
Yeah.
For Amanda, gotcha. So let me give you a little background on my history with Amanda Nunes. Twice I picked against her. That was against Holly Holm and Cyborg. And for Amanda to eradicate those two the way she did, I told myself I will never pick against her again. I'm sticking with it. I'm being a little nice by saying a third round knockout, but between now and Saturday's deadline, very likely I am going to change that to either a second or first round knockout.
I'm on first.
All right, that's a bet.
Yeah.
So based
on... The only reason I want is because the old girl might run.
Yeah, that's true. She would be smart to run, trust me. She would be smart to run.
Right.
So based on the picks that you gave, Anthony, it looks like you have 1, 2, 3.
We don't have no. Well, yeah, we have decisions. Okay, good. All right, good.
Yeah, yeah. So based on the picks that you just gave, you have 3 fights winning by way of KO, 2 winning by decision, none by way of submission.
All right. I was thinking, yeah, Leo Magny might get a submission. Who else might get one of that? So Sunside might be Cody by decision.
That's true. Very true.
All right, my picks are my picks. I'm with it, yeah.
Hey, listen, and if you want to change, just hit me up on the gram or text me, let me know, and I'll gladly make them changes for you. You got until Saturday at 5.
Okay.
All right, bet.
I might have to research some of these other guys, but I was just picking them. I don't know who some of them are.
All right, no problem at all, man. Hey, whatever research you need to do, you want to get back to me, let me know. You have until Saturday at 5 p.m., but otherwise, hey, that it is what it is.
Okay, that's what's up, man. I appreciate y'all.
Yes, sir. So, Deontay, did you want to chime in with your picks, or are you still going to wait until Melissa finalizes hers, or where do you stay?
Well, as you know, the vendetta I have with your wife
is
serious, and I will not be defeated by her.
Okay, all right.
However, I will select Amanda Nunes.
Okay.
I will select her, and I will select her to win by... win by submission.
Oh.
I select her to win by submission.
Oh, she'll hurt her and then get on the back and choke her out.
Absolutely.
Makes your pick.
Yes.
Why not?
Okay.
I mean, I'm never picking against men. She's the most aggressive person I've ever seen.
I've learned my lesson.
She's super aggressive. So I'm picking her submission. Do I need to pick the round or submission good enough?
No, you got to pick a round.
First round.
All right, that's a bet. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that wraps up our MMA POV pay-per-view points game and predictions for UFC 250. Anthony, you're more than welcome to join us for our very last segment, which is the final decision. We basically just chime in unapologetically on whatever matter is on the heart, whether it's an MMA matter or something outside of the cage. If you want, feel free to
stick. I got a bounce on this.
Okay. All right, that's a bet. But we do thank you for coming through and know that the invitation is always extended for you to come join us.
All right, I appreciate you, man.
Yes, sir, man. Glad to have you. Appreciate you.
Yes, sir.
All right, now.
Thanks,
take
care.
Thanks, man. Be easy. Man, once again, Anthony David, thank you so much for joining us, man, and chiming in, you know, with your thoughts.
That was great, man.
And
cool.
Yeah, that really was, man, to have you come in and chime in on your thoughts on the game, man. We really, really appreciate you. So now what we're going to do is we're going to close things out with our final decision. And so I'm going to go first, and then I will allow my colleague Deontay to close things out, and then we'll put a bow on this episode. So as we discussed earlier, it's been absolutely heavy as of late in reference to things that have taken place in the world. And so, you know, one thing that I have been struggling with is channeling and accurately describing my emotions as it relates to these matters. And then I saw something from a Quinta Brunson, who Erykah Badu retweeted, and it captured my thoughts on everything to an absolute T. And it goes like this: being black is having a good day, then seeing another black person was killed for no reason, then you have to think about it or talk about it all day, or you don't, and you just flat out numb yourself. It is a constant emotional war. That sentiment right there speaks to me perfectly. There are times where I just want to tune everything out because it's just so much to consume, and I just don't want to put myself through, you know, the emotions of disappointment and hurt. But then being a member of the black community and being a journalist, I feel an obligation to touch on these matters and to try to make some sort of contribution to rectify these wrongs. So when it comes to my feelings, you know, either I'm all in for discussing it I'm all in for discussing it, and I have those moments of numbness where I just don't want to deal with it. So that pretty much sums up my final decision of the week. I mean, I'm tired of it, but this is what we're dealing with. And this, I guess, is the constant emotion that I'll have to go through, and I just ask for, you know, and just trust in the Lord up above to, you know, help me to maintain peace in the midst of all of this craziness. Deontay?
Yeah, man, I feel you on that. My final decision is along the same lines. Mm-hmm. Also, as we spoke about earlier in the show, the recent events of Mr. Floyd, George Floyd, and Breonna Taylor, way heavy on my mind, Ahmaud Arbery, Chris Cooper, and of course the litany of others who experienced violence at the hands of people who can only be considered, in my opinion, white supremacists or racists. And keep in mind that you don't have to be white to advance the cause of white supremacy. I think it's very important we keep that in mind.
Yes.
But on to my final decision. 99 years ago, May 31st, 1921, in a small section of Tulsa, Oklahoma, that was once known as Black Wall Street, envious whites in that area took it upon themselves to completely destroy a town of African Americans who had managed to build a completely self-sufficient portion of Tulsa, Oklahoma. They took the town from them, burned it to the ground, and of course killed many African Americans in the process. In fact, those envious whites, those hateful whites, those serial killers were aided in their racial massacre by the National Guard, who rained down bombs from the sky onto the terrorized black residents of Black Wall Street. And in thinking about that incident that happened this day, or began this day, in 1921, we fast forward the clock 99 years later, and we see that same disgusting, sociopathic, psychotic, serial killer ish philosophy, action, murder, whatever you want to label it, is still being applied to African Americans today. And we're not talking about a specific type of African American. We're not talking about a specific city, town, or segment of the African American population by location. We're talking about all African Americans. All of us who are black and cannot shed this skin, no matter what, are in danger. And we have to, as a nation, reckon with what that means. And I don't mean reckon with it as in come to the table and have difficult conversations, though that is something that should occur. But we've been having those conversations, you know, at least since the 17th century. And we haven't been heard. And yet we've cried out to be heard. And we haven't been heard. And we look today, and we have Miss Taylor's murderers haven't even so much as been arrested. They certainly haven't been charged. In fact, when she was killed by those plainclothes officers who executed a no-knock warrant and did not announce themselves as being police officers, the only person that night who was arrested and taken to jail and charged with anything was her boyfriend, who happened to be in the bed with her that night, heard the commotion, grabbed his gun, fired back. He thought the couple was being robbed. He wanted to protect his woman. He wanted to protect his castle, as is his right, guaranteed by the Constitution, Second Amendment, and by the law in Louisville. So what we see is that no matter what we do, we can be at home, minding our business, eating ice cream. We aren't safe. We can be at home, minding our business, sleeping, preparing to go to work the next day. As a first responder, we aren't safe. We can be walking down the street, minding our business, and then because we have on a hoodie and have a certain color skin, we aren't safe. It pains me that we have to keep revisiting this violence so frequently that is acted upon us, that is enacted upon us, as if we haven't already been through enough. I think, I hope, that the time has come for many to realize that those white supremacist, racist, psychotic, sociopathic, serial killer mentality having people who are determined to see African Americans eliminated, I think the time has come that those individuals be taught a lesson, and that lesson is to continue to engage in, to practice, to believe in the philosophy that makes them believe it's okay to do whatever they want to African Americans. The time has come for those individuals to pay a price that is so high that they will have to change their ways. Now, what that price is, or how that price will be administered, or how that cost will be administered, I don't know. I don't know. But it's time that that cost be administered to them, because it's clear that they are not capable of changing by appealing to logical, reasonable, by appealing to them in logical, reasonable ways. So, as we head into the next week, I hope that everyone has a better week than the country has had this week. But I gotta be honest, I'm not very hopeful at all that anything will change until the cost of their actions is so high for them that they have no choice but to change. And I know that's heavy, and I know that's real, and I know that's jarring and shocking to some, but imagine how jarring or shocking or uncertain it is to be driving home from work and get pulled over, be perceived as a threat, and because maybe your license is expired, or maybe your registration has expired, or just because the officer doesn't like your tone, or the way you looked at him, or the way you spoke to him, or whatever it may be, there doesn't need to be a reason for those individuals. But you were on your way home, you got pulled over, you fully expected to make it home and eat dinner with your family, but your family gets a call later that night. It is announced to your family that you are no longer breathing. And that is a reality for every single African American in the United States of America. Now imagine for those non-African Americans, if that was your reality, what the fuck would you do? How the fuck would you feel? That's all I gotta say.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that puts a bow on this edition of Mixed Martial Arts Point of View Podcast. It was a mixed bag, honestly. It was heavy, considering everything that's going on. Yet it was fun, thanks to, you know, the usual banter that Deontay and I have, and the presence of Anthony David. We thank you once again for joining us and breaking in this, our new segment, The Face Off. We're definitely looking forward to interviewing more people in reference to mixed martial arts, as well as matters outside of the cage. Once again, Mixed Martial Arts Point of View Podcast can be heard on Spotify, Podbean, iTunes, and iHeartRadio. We can be found on Facebook at Wrestling POV Podcast and on Instagram and Twitter at MMA POV Podcast. Once again, this is Ant, and alongside me is my co-host.
Hey, it's me, Deontay, and I promise next week to be a little more lighthearted. You know what? I don't promise to be a little more lighthearted. I'll try to be a little more lighthearted, but I don't know.
All right. With that being said, we thank each and every one of you. Continue to be safe and exercise every precautionary measure needed to get through the pandemic known as COVID-19. And overall, may God continue to smile upon each and every one of us. Take care. Be easy.